So thank you for coming. I don't know what you expected when you looked at the topic. There's one called to be in the world, but not of the world. Is there a place for me to serve in government? Which I think is a valid question. I know growing up, I knew some people that were, quote, Christian, that actually were postmen. It was men most primarily at that time, which is very clearly a government position. It's a government paid job with a government retirement. And so it's very clearly working for the government. And I honestly, growing up, I never gave it much thought, to be frank. But that is one of the things. And very clearly, to understand the topic, or probably most of these topics, you need to understand the two kingdom concept or two kingdom theology. If we don't understand that, there's no real topic, to be quite frank. If I was a Baptist, or I'm pretty good friends with a Baptist pastor. I preached in their church already. And in their circles, this wouldn't really be a legitimate discussion. It's a slam dunk. There's no problem working for the government. In fact, that pastor was in the Vietnam War. The pastor of that church that I'm a friend with, he fought in Vietnam. So to them, it's a non-issue. Even though doctrinally, we can agree on probably 90% of doctrine, there's a big difference in this area of separation of church and state, two world, two kingdom theology. So the fact that our primary citizenship is in heaven, not of this world, we just heard four of our young people explain that very well, is where we're starting from here. And for me, the one thing that wasn't mentioned over there, but that's a really key point for me, is this. And that is Jesus before Pilate. If we ever want a perfect example of what does a separation of the kingdoms look like, it is our Lord before Pilate. And to really understand the magnitude of that, we have to understand that, number one, Jesus created Pilate. He was his creator. Number two, he was where Pilate's power was coming from. Pilate didn't have any power. When Jesus said that, he was saying the truth. You have no power over me, lest it be given you from above. That was a very true statement. All Pilate's power was wrapped up in the man standing in front of him. And we all know what happened. Christ didn't raise any defense. Which is the very embodiment of the two kingdoms. Colossians chapter 1, verse 16 and 17 says, "For by him all things were created, in heaven and in earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together." Some translations say exist, but the real point is, all their power comes from Christ alone. He is the head of all things. There's another thing I want us to think about before we get in discussion, and most of our time is going to be in discussion. But there's another thing I want to think about that. So we talk about separation of church and state. So we would very quickly say that as a minister, I should not entangle myself with the state. But it might not be as plain. What if I'm a nobody in church? Let's say that. I'm just a normal church member. I'm not a Sunday school teacher. I'm not a minister. So how does that apply to me? because that'd be an argument we might hear. Like, I'm not in church leadership. I'm not involved in that. So how does that apply to me if I want to be a postman? I'll ask that question for now. Before we get into discussion, I'm going to go down a little different road. Historically, we know this. Historically, we have practiced, as Anabaptists, the complete separation of church and state. And we could go back to, I believe it was Conrad Grebel. Conrad Grebel's father was one of the elders of the town. He was a Christian, and he didn't side with either the government or the Anabaptists. He thought they were both wrong. But he professed to be a Christian. Where he found himself is that he was sitting on the council that was condemning Anabaptists to death. Probably people he knew, seeing as Conrad was an Anabaptist. I'm going to go a little closer to that. We're not as familiar with this. But in 2003 in Paraguay, and I have the article here if you want it, I'll tell you where to get it. But in Paraguay in 2003, there were Mennonites that were persuaded to become involved in the government. You're not in your head, Keith, so you probably know something about this. Because of their connection with the person who became the governor or the ruler in that time. And I'm just going to... And I found it interesting in how they were persuaded was by they knew the person who became the governor, and he wore them down with some of the arguments we heard today about, well, if they're good people, they know what should be done, they have sound moral, sound fiscal. Fiscal was a big thing in the downfall of Paraguay at that time. Fiscal irresponsibility, corruption, that's part of what took the government down. His argument that finally persuaded them to become involved was they were fiscally responsible, they were morally responsible, they were good people, and Paraguay needed good people to get it back on its feet. At first they resisted. Ultimately he wore them down, and a number of them went into the government, and after a number of years, a good many of them got back out again, but not all of them. And ultimately, those that did not ended up denying their Anabaptist faith or their Mennonite faith. So ultimately, it took them pretty much the same path as the Dutch when they became involved in government in Europe. They pretty much lost their faith eventually. So there's this historical precedent for Anabaptists that deny the separation of church and state usually end up at a place where they lose their faith. Now I'm going to make it a little murkier, and I'm going to talk about Joseph and Daniel primarily, but we could include Esther in that. But both Joseph and Daniel were at least next to the king. So they had ultimate authority in the countries. Probably Daniel, and I'm going out on a limb here, so you can saw it off, Keith, if you know better. But very likely when Nebuchadnezzar was constrained to be as an ox, it is highly likely that Daniel ruled the kingdom because he was next to the king when that happened. So there's the likelihood exists that Daniel actually filled Nebuchadnezzar's role for those 7 years in keeping the government and the country functioning. we hold Daniel and Joseph both up as great men of God. And then we turn right around and say, but we shouldn't be involved in civil government. In fact, we shouldn't even work for it. Or we'll see if that's what we say. We'll talk about that. But that is what we would put out there. Going to make the water a little muddier now with Joseph. This doesn't apply to Daniel, but it applies very well to Joseph. We all know the story of Joseph. You might have thought of it in this way, but I'm going to put it out there. When the people of Egypt needed food, what did they first come to Joseph with? Their money, right? And when the money got all, then what? And when the land got all. And ultimately, I think you can see where I'm going now. Ultimately, Joseph bought everything from the people, including themselves, for the government. When it was all said and done, Egypt owned the people, the land, and the money. It was all through Joseph's action. This sounds almost like heresy, I admit it. But it's the truth. That's what happened. Joseph orchestrated that thing of how he was in charge of measuring out the grain. It was his idea to store it up. It's really God's command. But the point I'm trying to get us to think about is this is some muddy territory that we're in. It's not as clear cut and dried as we say it is. On one hand. On the other hand, I think it's pretty clear in Old Testament. In New Testament, it is cut and dry. But there's these aspects of this, our involvement in government, that are muddy, are questionable. I would have heard the Joseph Bible story and largely thought of it as a good thing. He saved them from famine, and he did. That's one aspect of it. But the other aspect of it ends up being that Egypt owned everything about those people when it was all said and done 7 years later. They had literally nothing. And it was orchestrated at the hand of Joseph. There's another aspect of this that's not really totally related to my topic. Somebody else has it, but it comes in. And it's this. It's we view a certain separation from politics. And we're not going to talk about voting or any of that. There's room for that, in my opinion, but we're going to leave that at that. But if I work for the government, I'm certainly going to have a greater interest in the political involvement because my job depends on what happens in the political realm. There's that aspect that comes to bear that I guess I use a word. The word I keep coming back to in all this is entanglement. There's this entanglement that I get into when I kind of start mixing the two kingdoms. When the line isn't clearly defined, I become entangled rather quickly. So you all have the question and answer. Or not necessarily question and answers, but questions for discussion. And I'm going to raise them. I have some comments about most of them. But what I would really like from this group is let's get in a dialogue about what does this look like to us as modern day radical Anabaptist Christians. And I use the word radical, which we probably don't like. I'm not sure I totally like it. But as we look at society, and we saw that spin all through what happened over there. They'd come back with rationalization. where the person being questioned was painted as a radical. You're taking this radical stance. And the reality of it is, brothers and sisters, we are taking a radical stance. As society looks on us, when we talk about this two-world, two-kingdoms world, they really don't have a big concept of it. They really don't. They don't view it that way. And when we invoke that, we need to be able to explain why and how we view that as where our belief is founded. And to me, it always goes back to Christ. And the example that I started with is still one of the best examples, is Christ before Pilate, because he's saying it in his own words. It's right out of his mouth. My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight. Fight so that he wouldn't be crucified or that he would be released. So, does working in the government require the person to be a member of a union? I think the answer to this question is pretty apparent. I didn't research it to a deep degree, but most government jobs entail being a member of some type of a union, some type of a government union. Your pension comes from that. I wouldn't say they all do. I don't know that for a fact, but many of them do. Many of the ones that we would consider because they pay well, that's part of it. And then, so that, it raises another level of entanglement. Now, we work for the government and we're part of a union. Any thoughts, comments, as we go through here, I want you to jump in. I don't just want to do all the talking. I'm open to questions, I'm open to comments. I really hope we get some discussion going, because I think that would be beneficial.
I have questions if no one else does. You get us started at least. If we take a clear stance on government employment, how does that inform our stance on other types of entanglement, such as Social Security or disaster relief or government aid programs, which, like, today I was talking with a farmer who, because they're a farmer, all farms are involved in one another program. There may be some exceptions, but in general, farms are involved in government aid programs. What's the most scriptural way to look at which types of involvement are good for us to have as a Christian versus those who are?
It's a very valid question. Did you all hear?
Did
you all heard what he asked? Yeah. So I'll sum it up. The question is, so if we're in agreement, we wouldn't work for the government, so we wouldn't be on the government's payroll. What about government programs? And the obvious one to me is the stimulus checks we got over COVID. That's an obvious one. How do we view them then? So, on one hand, I say, well, I wouldn't work for the government. I wouldn't be a government employee, part of a government union. How does any type of government insurance, crop insurance would be one of them, COVID stimulus checks, the list could go on, Social Security even. How does that look in light of entanglement? Or where do I draw the line? I would take the COVID check, but I wouldn't work for the government. I'd take my Social Security check, but I wouldn't work for the government. This is gonna get pretty murky pretty quick, which I knew it would. That's why I wanted to have it be discussion. Go ahead.
I just wanna
Right, I like that. So I think that is a valid, at least one of the valid ways to look at it. Because there's clearly some things that aren't entanglement or not as entangling as the others. For instance, I don't want to stop the conversation here, but I'll pick on the low-hanging fruit. The COVID checks, for instance, we didn't solicit them. And there was no means to really give them back. Okay? You got the check. You got the money. There's no means to give it back. You did nothing to get it other than be a citizen of the United States or live in the United States, maybe. I don't think you even had to be a citizen. So, using your premise, there's minimal entanglement with that. And could I take that check and give it to the work of DNR or the church? Absolutely. That's my prerogative to do whatever I want to with. Does that make it right? Go ahead, Keith, you were going to say something. The government assistance for businesses, yeah. Yeah. It was definitely more entangling than the checks, put it that way. It was definitely more entangling than the checks that you needed. Even then, well, I like that you brought that up because now we have another scale of, so we have the checks that we have basically no say on. Then you have the government business loans, which are still not at the level of working for the government, being a member of their union, but there's more entanglement because ultimately what happened there, if you met the criteria, you spent the money on payroll, the government forgave the loan. They paid the bank, basically. The money came from the bank, technically, but the government paid the bank if you met all the criteria and did the right things with the money. That's summing it up quickly, but it was way more entangling because there were all these forms you had to fill out and bars you had to meet and all that thing. And then there's a working form. So, if we go with the thing, if we go with the thought process, if it benefits Christ's kingdom and my ensnarement is minimal, I'm putting words in your mouth now, so correct me if you don't like it. Maybe it's not such a bad thing. But as the ensnarement goes up, maybe I need to be more critical and more cautious of how closely I get connected. I think for me, I'm going to throw this out, maybe to feed the discussion a little bit, is with both the business loans and the COVID stimulus checks, and even Social Security. I have no real contract, if you will, with the government. When I'm employed by them, I have some form of contract, more or less, agreement, if for lack of a better word. The same as if you employ me, I have some agreement with you. There's something I'm agreeing to, where with those other two things, I'm really not agreeing to a whole lot, personally. It's a little bit like Joseph first taking the money. When he took the money, there wasn't much entanglement with Egypt. It's pretty minimal at that level. Any other thoughts? I'm talking too much. Comments? I believe there are. I know there's a question on your sheet, and I'm going to jump to that now because then we're going to talk more about this, but it leads right into that. So it's about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's 6. Number 6. A Christian serving in a governmental planning commission may need to make a decision affecting an abortion clinic, a tattoo parlor, an LGBTQ facility, or a Muslim mosque. So, this isn't your direct question, but let's just talk about planning boards, because this would be an area where, to me, is quite gray, where talk about a local planning commission, a lot of good that can be done there. A lot of ways I can influence the community. I can become better known in the community. Who I am can be perpetuated. I have a lot of opportunities with the gospel, right? I'm fully on board with all that. But what do we do with the question? Because that's not it's a theoretical question, yes, but it's not really. We all know these things have to have local planning commission approval. And we all know they're in most of our towns, or will be.
I think it's a really good question to ask, but I think that specifically making decisions about these morally questionable facilities would be legally possible, because as I understand, I doubt how did, like, making decisions regarding these morally questionable facilities would be legally possible? Because, like, if you make a decision about a mosque, it would apply to all religious facilities. And so, like, there may be a situation that would be very specifically morally questionable, but I can't immediately think of one that would be illegal and be applied to the morally questionable
facilities. So you're saying that the planning commission's job would be interpreting law, not necessarily making a difference.
Right, but I think the premise, I'm certainly not contradicting that. The premise I'm asking it from is if I sit on that commission and we're going to approve something to do with LGBTQ thing, where does my entanglement start? Because I can make the argument, well, I'm on the commission, it's a commission's decision, I'm just one member. See the line I'm going down?
Yeah, that definitely makes sense.
I'm fine with what you said. But see the line of thinking I'm going down? It's like, I got on here to do good and help with schools and you name it, churches. But now all of a sudden, we have this. Because of the work. 50 years ago, that wouldn't have probably been a valid question. Okay, I admit that. But in today's world, it is kind of a valid question. If I'm going to be involved at the local level, local government level, which, again, 50 years ago, I know some people that were, to be totally frank. Not even more recently than that. That are involved in local government, those kinds of things. But the question still comes back, and I get it, it's not technically working for the government, yet it kind of is, because we're... Even if we're not receiving much of a salary, we're still working for government. We're representing it at the very least. But, so I put that in there to stimulate conversation and thought. My proposal and all that is, and maybe this is where you were starting from, is I'm not sure in the time we live in it, if this is a really cut and dried thing anymore. That we can really come down and say, yes, we should. No, we should. I mean, the answer can be if we never do anything, we'll never get entangled. That is the one side. That's a very valid answer. But I think the topic was brought up in more of a platform of to get us to think about what does it look like? And can I at all be involved? Because very clearly, like you said, there's much good that I can do. And there's much influence I can gain. That's a very valid point. Because a lot of these government jobs, we're not really having any more opportunity to save souls than any other job we would do, to be totally frank. We're looking at it more from, at least with a planning commission, because that's what we're talking about, as community greater good and getting a platform. I mean, is that a true statement?
You were going to say something to me.
Do you have something that you want to say that would contribute to the...
Thank you.
That's a very valid perspective. We could make the same argument, and I didn't bring this up earlier, so I'm glad you brought that. We could make the same argument. You pick any major corporation you want, 3M, you name it. A lot of what I'm saying, those same entanglements would exist. The difference where we would kind of draw a line is Anabaptist, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong. Don't hear me saying that. The difference where we would draw the line is Anabaptist, because traditionally we have viewed the government different than 3M. I think them lines are significantly blurred, as you raised the point now, from what they would have been at one time. So a lot of what we're talking about could apply to other occupations besides the government. Let's look at a couple more of these and keep going. If we have a government or as an employer, will there be times we're required to violate our convictions to accomplish responsibilities? The answer to that is probably yes, but it's also probably yes if it's 3M. Probably. I don't see that as being much different. It comes back to, am I willing to? And an argument could be made that that is part of being a witness or a testimony, my willingness to stand up. Government mail carriers, I put that in there because historically, that's probably one of the areas where at least conservative Christian protesting people would cross over. However, back then, they didn't deliver packages on Sunday like they do now. But I'm throwing that in there. If you're a mail carrier, do you deliver packages on Sunday? The answer to that is you do. Since the government is taking a position that people no longer be required to be identified by sex or gender, that has been determined at birth, how does that affect me? And again, that's not specific to the government. I view working for the government on one hand as working for any large employer, hence 3M, like I said earlier, I'll keep picking on them. You would have that same exact challenge there. It wouldn't be any different. The goals and principles of government are many times drastically different than our Christian goals. Again, that could be true for any number of businesses, but I'm going to stop there and let's talk about some of these things. And I recognize that a lot of what I'm saying is work-related, and it's not really limited to just work-related things. But the topic is centered on working for the government. There are a lot of these entanglements don't necessarily just involve being involved in work. I mean, quite honestly, and this goes into a bunny trail, but I think it needs to be raised, is a lot of these questions come up when I'm a member of a local fire department, to be totally frank. While that's, quote, not technically government, a lot of these same potential entanglements come up in that. And that's widely embraced. Go ahead, you were going to say something. And that would be normal. I mean, honestly, radical Christians are the best employees you can honestly have. Everybody acknowledges that. It's a proven fact. They're more efficient. They're more respectful. They'll do a good job. They're more honest. All those things are positive. Which, right to your point. I mean, go ahead, Marlon.
One thing I find interesting in this whole discussion is that I've lived in a number of different communities, and what I'm hearing is that there are different community convictions depending on where you live. Growing up in Kansas,
anyone else?
I work in a science. say, well, we're not far from
the government. So anyways, Proverbs 11:11, most great citizens are good for cities and make it prosper.
Thank you for bringing that up, Jason, because I never even thought about that when I was thinking about this. But that's a very valid point. If, like you said, if you work in an environment where it's commission-based, there is automatic competition. If there's multiple people on the sales floor, which may or may not be your setting, but how do I translate that into my two kingdom theology? It's a very valid question. I mean, the more I looked at this, the more it is not black and white. There's some things that are black and white, obviously. But do I work for the government at all, like Marlon? Or is it totally off the table? That isn't so black and white the more I dug around in it. Because there are areas where it's legitimate, probably, in my opinion at least, that we could probably do that and not be entangled. And then there are other areas that very clearly will become quickly entangled. I think when we get involved in anything that's political working for the government, the entanglement thing goes up drastically in a hurry. Because politics is entangling, even if I get involved in them on a personal level, it becomes very quickly entangling with the government.
Some of your county legislators, and seeing their how they work, even at county level, if you get involved at that point, it becomes very educational. I don't see how I could be part of that.
I can't confirm it. I know the Dutch Anabaptists have it on here. Yeah, in the 1600s, the Dutch Mennonites started out at the service levels, and they eventually ended up in the government at the upper levels. But by that point in time, they weren't Mennonites anymore. So I think there's danger in that.
Cause or effect.
I can't confirm what you're saying necessarily, Mel, but I would believe there's truth to it. And I'm certainly not saying that to be plain, that I want that to be Marlon to be viewed in a negative light because of that. I'm not saying it's cause and effect that if you start here, you end up here. I believe that has a lot to do with what's in here and our willingness to say, and I view this in any company. I mean, personally, I couldn't be involved in corporate management of 3M. I really couldn't because of some of the things they endorse and support. And they're not the government. So now, could I work in a 3M warehouse? Probably quite likely I could. So I think that's true again, not just in government, but in lots of our employment things. There comes a line where we cross. I think the danger, and probably the reason I didn't ask them the reason they did this, but I think the danger is in, as individuals, do we know where that line is? And is that line solid that when I get there, this is a line I can't cross? I'm going to have to do something. I appreciated what you said on that basis. When it gets here, this I can't do. If that costs me my job, so be it.
That's a clue there for me that
question, another question I want to ask, because we're not there now, but time could happen. It's down most of the way. It says, what about Joseph, Daniel, and Esther, who were in government and also were Jews, which at that point in time, they were God's people. So that would equate them to Christians today. Was it okay because they were compelled? The one thing I left out about Joseph, and this gets really messy with him. In Esther's case, it was quite clear that she was compelled, had very little choice. But it's not quite that clear with Joseph. Joseph was sold as a slave. He was somewhat compelled. He didn't voluntarily leave home, go down to Egypt, get involved in the government, and become who he was. He was compelled to a certain level. My question, I put that out there to say, does that make a difference? Today we're not compelled. But that don't mean that time will never come. Well, you can actually beg out when you get there. Yeah, you will. I've been there and done that. You will. You'll get dismissed like immediately. No, I actually, it's probably 10 years. I was actually summoned to federal court in Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia. And yeah, that is the exercise. You can't get dismissed except by the judge. But I can tell you, I didn't say word for word what you said, but something similar. It's like, now, they don't let you go home. You have to sit there till the whole pool is depleted with everybody else, and then you can go. But you're off. You're done. I mean, you're off the hook at that point, because, and to me, that does tie into this, because the government very clearly recognizes, just like we saw exemplified over there, that there are legitimate reasons that Christians can't be hooked up with them. They really give validity to the two kingdom theology by their behavior, because they don't really want us at that point. Well, you would have to be in contempt of court then, because the judge is the one that dismisses you. So you'd probably end up in prison at least till the thing's over. I think a certain level of personal conviction comes in there too. You would have the recourse of not serving, but you would be in contempt of court at that point in time, so you'd end up in prison at least till the trial's over for that. But again, you would still have that recourse. I mean, I think we need to recognize that as Christians, we do have recourse. It's not attractive. Of course it's not attractive, but we still do have that. There isn't, it's not like we're going to be executed. I mean, it don't quite come to that level at this point yet.
Yeah, I was just going to say concerning Joseph, they
would have
been executed.
Yeah. I know it. What do we think about that? I mean, I think this is a point we need to understand and get. So how do we justify, if that's put to us, how are we going to justify our stance of that I can't do that?
I think Daniel does bring an interesting example, because on several times throughout his being in government administration, he took stances that potentially could have cost him his life. And left it with God. Like, he was thrown into the lion's den, that's about as close as you're going to get. He refused to eat the building's meal. And so he was uncompromising when it came to obeying God. But God delivered him. I don't know exactly how that applies to us. We can have some confidence that we can be obedient to Scripture in whatever circumstance that we might end up in. How that looks is hard to predict. I don't think there's anything new on this side.
I wouldn't be
Jews, but they were in foreign lands.
Yeah. I wouldn't be being fair if I didn't point out they're all Old Testament, which I think he's probably all picked up on. I couldn't give you a similar example in the New Testament, I guess is what I'm saying. Those things I picked out are Old Testament examples, which very clearly there was a change in the New Testament, New Covenant. There was a change. I would say, though, because you raise a very interesting point, I would say, though, I think for me at least, sometimes my lack of faith, I guess, for lack of a better word, is, and Marlon, you pointed out very plainly, is it's easier for us to look at Daniel as a Bible story, okay? Daniel didn't know God was going to deliver any more than I do. That God is still the same God today. See, I wonder if that isn't sometimes where my problem comes in. Daniel was willing to die. No questions asked. God delivered him, yeah, but he didn't know. He was a human being just like we are, and he couldn't see the future any more than we can see the future. But he was willing. There was no question of his allegiance. Which I think is where the danger comes in. You look at what happened in Paraguay, what happened with the Dutch Mennonites, what really comes back to is a question of their allegiance. More than if it was 100% right or wrong. It comes back to a question of their allegiance and what they would be true to. Because in Paraguay, for sure, I didn't do as much research on the Dutch Anabaptists. But the first couple years, it actually went pretty well. They didn't get sucked in. They were able to maintain who they were. When they really got sucked in, and this is where the danger lies, and you mentioned this, Mel, is when they realized that it was a position of power. And I could use it to my advantage. That's really when they started going down. And to me, that's the real danger, to be totally frank. Yeah, I think there's some obvious entanglements that we can't be involved in. I'd personally, like you, Marlon, have a hard time being part of the union. So that's obvious. But I think there's areas that aren't so obvious, where it really comes down to, who am I and where does my allegiance go? And then back to the point that you raise. The next question on here is about the whole thing I pointed out about Joseph. And I asked the question, So if we look at it from that aspect, how does that look from my Christocentric view, Christ-centric view? Does that change how I view Joseph's behavior? Because it really should. It honestly really should. You hold up what he actually did, and I'm not trying to make this about being critical of Joseph, but I'm just saying you hold up what Joseph actually did against the Christ-centric view. Everything he did and the parceling out of that grain was wrong from a Christocentric view. He wasn't working for the good of the people. He was working for the good of the government. If he would have been Christocentric, he would have gave him the grain. And we say, well, that wasn't his prerogative. I think it absolutely was if you go look at Scripture. I don't think he was commanded that he had to charge anything for it. Pharaoh said, you manage as you do as you see best, and gave it into Joseph's hand. I'm not trying to bash Joseph. That's not my intent. My intent is to try to get us to see that it matters a lot about what's in here. More probably than any other thing. We can make all these rules. We can say all these things. But if we really, really look at some biblical examples, it really matters what's in here. It really matters, where does my allegiance lie? That probably is the top question. And all the others fall underneath that. And again, I, for me, there's obvious places that I would draw the line. But I would say, like you've heard me say multiple times, they would translate immediately over into corporate America. It wouldn't stay with the government. There's obvious places that I would draw the line. So I think this whole question of how does a Christian look working for the government, I think we could rephrase that question and say, what does it look like when I look at my relationship with my employer from the perspective of being Christ-centered? I think that's a fair question to ask. Not that asking about the government is wrong, but I think it don't just stop.